SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and we're into hour three, and Johnny D just wrapping up, and Johnny touched on Bob Levy, but I told you last week when the news came that Levy had passed that we needed to pause and really appreciate what Levy brought to racing, and really one of those bigger-than-life type characters, and the story of Bet Twice alone is worthy of a full segment, let alone having to try to encapsulate Bob Levy's life. Levy had the success and the opportunity to really have two different kinds of experiences with great horses. One with Bet Twice, where he brought along, Dick will tell you, he probably brought along 60 people. And then singularly with Housebuster, who provided him with one of his great thrills of his entire life. If you were on hand for his Hall of Fame speech when Housebuster finally got in, when the logjam of sprinters finally was broken. It's always a pleasure when we can bring Dick Girardi on, and whether it's talking about buyer figures or anything Philadelphia sports related or horse anything, Dick Girardi, even under these circumstances, Dick, I appreciate you visiting.
Absolutely, Stephen. I actually attended the memorial service for Bob. It was yesterday afternoon in Trevose, which isn't really far from Parks. And just to give you a measure of the man, among the speakers were former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, the Temple and former Penn basketball coach Frant Dunphy, and then all five of Bob's children spoke, and one of his grandchildren. And it was a spectacular ceremony, fitting for a great man.
You wrote the obit for the Philly papers and for Philly.com, and also in the DRF. And you know, there's so many different things you could talk about. Johnny actually hit on being a Penn Charter grad. He talked about Bob's association with Penn Charter, and he referenced the little Quakers. But on the horse racing side, the Bet Twice story is spectacular in and of itself, and I don't mean the exploits on the racetrack. I'm talking about everybody he brought along with him.
No question. In fact, one of his partners was Ed Stefanski, who was a former Penn basketball player. He's now the general manager of the Detroit Pistons, had the same job with the Sixers a few years ago. Ed had a bumper sticker made up in 1987, "Honk if you own Bet Twice," because everybody did. It was just a spectacular time. It was interesting, too, Steve. It was my first Triple Crown at the paper, and what a perfect timing to have a local horse, of course, Bob, a Philadelphia sports legend, to have a filly horse second in the Derby, second in the Preakness, of course, wins the Belmont by 14 lengths. But, yeah, it was a great education for me, and I think a lot of people said it at the service yesterday. But Bob, his role in life was to make sure everybody else had a good time, and he did it. He just wanted to make people happy. Everybody was his friend. He was everybody's friend. And I was thrilled that Housebuster made the Hall of Fame, not just for the horse, but to me it meant Bob made the Hall of Fame, because nobody deserved it more than he did throughout his career. Obviously, not only owning racehorses, but owning a race course in Atlantic City for years and years, and the United Nations and all the great racing that happened there throughout. And I don't know if you all touched on it. I'm certainly glad Johnny brought up Penn Charter and the Little Quakers, but the father of American simulcasting is Bob Levy. The first simulcasting done in America was in the early 80s when Bob took the races from the Meadowlands and brought them into Atlantic City. He saw the future before anybody else did. He actually went up to Canada, saw it, said, wait a second, we need to find a way to do this. So all of you who are now getting the chance to bet a race every 15 seconds, you can thank Bob Levy. He was the guy that started it.
out of curiosity, and given the Philadelphia connection, I suppose Tommy Roberts has to tie in here somewhere.
He probably does. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Philadelphia connections. I mean, NFL film, Steve Sable, I believe, was a little Quakers player way back in the day.
Unbelievable.
But Bob loved his alma mater, the University of Pennsylvania. He supported all of their sports programs. There's the Robert P. Levy Tennis Pavilion. Especially loved women's tennis. One of his daughters, Wendy, was a terrific tennis player. But, yeah, there was nothing Bob wouldn't do. In fact, I've heard stories, Steve, from back in the day where he would go to, like, a Notre Dame game, basketball game in the afternoon. He was very good friends with Dicker Phelps, who was an assistant at Penn back in the day. And then they would fly back on his plane to a Penn game that night at the Palestra. I would love to have been along some of those junkets. That must have been awesome.
Expand on the bet twice experience, because I have my own tie-in or friendship when I first moved to this area and would have to go to, you know, from Montreal, I moved to the Saratoga area and would have to go to the sports bars to watch the Eagles. And one of the first people I met that year that I arrived here permanently and was at, I think I might have been at Peabody's, and a guy comes and says, "Oh, you watch an Eagle game?" I said, "Yeah." He comes and sits with me. It was Mark Marcus. And I don't know if you know Mark, but Philadelphia dentist, and he had been pretty much semi-retired, and he moved to the Saratoga area and loves the horses, and he was also very friendly with Andy Serling's dad, his late dad. But Mark was part of the bet twice, and he was the one who first gave me the backstory of everybody that was involved, including Joe Frazier and, I mean, the sports stars.
It
was crazy. How many, 60, 70 people?
Nobody knows what the exact count was, other than they almost couldn't fit them all in the winner's circle at the Belmont Stakes. There are some amazing stories with bet twice. Certainly the ownership group, that where Bob just wanted every friend he could find. John Nash was in it. He's a horse owner, former Sixers general manager also. Everybody just kind of lost count. Bob just gave everybody a piece. But the bet twice story was fascinating in so many different ways. He wasn't particularly well-bred. He was by a horse called Sporting Life.
Sure.
And Bob always, the family had some good horses, but really were not factors in the Triple Crown. And, of course, Jimmy Kroll trained for Bob, and they were very good friends. He trained for his parents before he trained for Bob. And they all wanted to get in it. And then it was just so frustrating, because they came along in a year where maybe in another year they could have won the Triple Crown, but they happened to come along with a Hall of Famer in Ali Sheba, who kept beating him in the Derby, beat him in the Preakness. And Mike Levy, who's and his wife Meg, were both involved in horse racing down in Kentucky now. Mike told a great story at the service, where at the Belmont Stakes, Bob comes into the paddock and sees Craig Perrett, who didn't need any instruction. Craig's one of the smartest guys that ever rode a horse. Says, "You know, Craig, this horse doesn't want to go a mile and a half." He says, "But, you know, none of them do." He says, "So here's what we need to do." He says, "When you come by him," and remember, bet twice had the lead in the stretch in both the first two races. He says, "When you go by him this time, go way by him, blow by him. Don't wait around." So that's exactly what Craig did. He blew by him, and he won by 14 lengths. So Bob looked like a genius.
In one of the great performances of that era in the Belmont Stakes, and one of the famous moments, and in fact that Triple Crown, to some extent, can almost be thought of as partially the kickoff to that era that really, you know, where the Belmont grew and we got into that intensive Triple Crown watch period.
Yep.
From that point.
No question, right? 2 years later, we had the Sunday silence, Easy Goer battles. But there's so many sidelines to that Belmont. First of all, nobody thought that twice could win. I think he's like 5-1. And it made some sense, right? He couldn't win at the shorter distances. Why would he win at the longer ones? Well, I was watching the race in a box with Jimmy Kroll, and everybody was focused on the top of it with that twice winning by so much. That wasn't what he was looking at. He was looking in the back to see where Ali Sheba was going to finish. Steve, if you remember, that was the era of the $1 million bonus for best finishes in the Triple Crown races.
Ooh, that's
they needed Ali Sheba to finish fourth to get the million. Well, Jimmy was watching intently, and he says, and he was cheering right to the finish. And Ali Sheba did finish fourth. It was interesting, Governor Rendell, when he gave his speech yesterday, had to remind Bob after the race, oh, by the way, you won an extra million, because he'd forgotten about it. And it actually gets funnier. That night, they'd all checked out of their hotels. They were going to head home to Philly. Somehow, Bob got them checked back into the Waldorf Astoria, calls Sonny Werblin. They have no place to eat. Sonny gets them a room at the 21 Club. So only with Bob would something like that happen. And I actually wrote about that. I have a second story that's probably going to appear online sometime today. The Obit, you kind of have to write in a certain style. This is going to be in my style, but just like hanging with Bob Levy. So everybody that likes racing and knows Bob will get a kick out of it.
You know, we should mention, and you bring in Jimmy Kroll and the all these personalities that were tangential to Levy's life and experience. Atlantic City Racecourse figures into this, and there's the ownership, I'm not sure what the period was that when he got involved and when he got out.
Well, he owned it till the racetrack closed, I believe, in the late 90s. His family owned it for quite a long time. And I'm giving away my story, but that's okay. People read it anyway. But I got to the paper in February of 1985, and that summer I went to Atlantic City to introduce myself to Jim Murphy, who was the general manager, and Bob, who owned it. And Steve, I swear this is true. I wasn't sitting at Bob's table for more than 5 minutes, and he goes, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, I don't know. I got to send in some selections, whatever. He says, want to go to Saratoga? I said, sure, I want to go to Saratoga. So I think we're going to meet like on the turnpike somewhere. He says, no, meet me in my hangar. We'll fly up to Albany. I'm going, no, this is ridiculous. But that was Bob. I mean, 5 minutes, you were his best friend. That was just him.
Well,
so we went up to watch one of his horses run that afternoon. I couldn't tell you the name or how the horse did, but that just, he was so great to everybody who met him. And for me, it's very personal because I was just getting to the paper, really just getting into the game, and he went out of his way to show me the ropes. And it was like that from beginning to end.
Well, and the name will live on forever in the game. And you made reference to Michael, who of course has the insurance business, and
yep.
is married to Meg Levy of Bluewater,
yep.
Bluewater Sales, and yep. then his baby, his daughter, is married to Anthony Beck, Gainsway.
Angela. Yep. Angela.
Angela.
Gainsway. And yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and Kit is the oldest daughter, and Bob's the oldest son, and Wendy, I told you about, is a tennis player. Just, I mean, wonderful people who I got to know, it's hard to believe, 31 years ago now with Bet Twice. But yeah, I was wondering if we'd ever have another Philly run. And of course, then we had three in a row from 04, 05, and 06. But yeah, that was some introduction to cover the Triple Crown of Bet Twice.
He basically inherited it. And I was going to ask you where the racetrack, the family, the family had a bunch of different businesses, right? They weren't confined to one arena.
No, that's true. Bob ran a thing called DRT Industries. Exactly what they did, I was never quite sure. Another great line at the service yesterday. One of the grandchildren was giving his speech, and at one point he said to Bob's wife, Sissy, what does Granddad do? And her answer was, he talks on the phone. Because that's all that he ever told Bob. He would be at his house talking on the phone. So anyway, it was a business that had a lot of different interests. But keep in mind, his uncle was William Paley, who founded CBS.
Yes.
That's where the Paley comes from, Robert Paley,
right.
Levy. So was in a great family. Dr. Leon Levy was his dad, and Blanche was his mom. So you're just a fascinating, I didn't know any of them, but just a fascinating backstory, and just in Philadelphia, he's a legend in the town, not just because of horse racing. He was involved in so many different things. He ran the Philadelphia Sports Congress at one time. He owned part of the Phillies, he and his wife, for a long time. There just really wasn't much of anything that Bob wasn't involved with. So he is a civic treasure down here. And, of course, we know him in the business as a horse racing treasure for sure.
You know, it's funny, given the breadth of his interest and the football tie-in, you know, the Eagles changed hands probably three times during his lifetime, and he was never interested in buying from Jerry Wolman or when Wolman bought him or later Leonard the Toast. Or I'm surprised that there was no tie into the Birds.
Yeah, it's interesting, Steve. I don't know if he was or was not involved at one point, but you're right. I mean, certainly when Toast sold it to Norman Brayman, he was selling it because he kept hitting 19 at Atlantic City, and that didn't work out that well for Leonard. So he needed to sell it on the cheap. So yeah, I don't know that Bob was ever involved in a group or thought about buying the Eagles himself, but he certainly loved his football. And the little Quakers are a legend down here among many of the players they had played for. Was Matt Ryan as the
right.
quarterback for the Falcons, also a Penn charter guy.
Now, I wasn't going to let Bob Levy's passing go without further comment, because he was just such a great personality, and you know, one of the nicest things anybody can say about a stakeholder in the game is that they were good losers, that they were somebody who won gracefully and lost gracefully, and that I saw that quote from a couple of sources.
Yeah, that was Mike Levy, Bob's son, who told that to me, and I think he might have said it to a couple of other people, too, for stories. And I know there was a ton of stories. I haven't had a chance to read them all yet. I'll get to them eventually. But, yeah, everybody did a great job of it last week.
Well, Dick Girardi's with us. We spent a few minutes appreciating the life and the contributions around the game of Bob Levy. I got to get a couple of thoughts from you, Dick, too, while we're together, because on Saturday morning, you were well-positioned in the BCBC. Give us some blow-by-blows and talk about your betting challenge experience.
Yeah, it was interesting, Steve. I had a couple of horses I wanted to lock in on Saturday. I probably had a half a dozen opinions. And so then I spent all of Friday night just trying to figure out what's the best chance, the best situation to get me to 100,000 approximately. You never know what the number's going to be to win. It turned out that was going to be enough this year. And it came down for me to two horses. And unfortunately, I made the wrong choice, which can happen in that. I ended up locking in on the Philly and Mare Sprint and Baffert's Philly, whose name is escaping me. You'll tell me in a second. I probably forgot the things I wanted to. And I thought that if I bet the majority of my money on her, that would get me to where I wanted to get to. Unfortunately, she got off bad. Marley's Freedom is her name.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of that. It got off poorly, was way wide, and I think got beat like a neck, a head and a neck or something like that. Doesn't matter. Finished fourth. So that. My other horse was Enable. My issue with Enable was I was concerned if I sat there all day with my money and got to the second to last race in the contest, that she could be 1-2 or 3-5, and I could bet whatever I wanted, still wasn't going to be enough to win. The contest could have gotten away from me. As it turned out, I wish I'd have done the other thing, but I didn't. And I hit a nice exacta in that race, thanks to Jay Privman, who gave me a good look at the second horse, and then I bet a bunch of money in the Classic, but wasn't even close. And just about every bet I was making, I probably had 15 or 20 different bets or combination of bets on Saturday that would have gotten me over 100, which is, to me, that's as good as you can get in that contest, because it's so hard just to get in position. And I got in position on Friday because I absolutely love that double, the Philly, two-year-old Philly double that Chad Brown, newspaper of record, who really couldn't lose, and I didn't think Jay Walk was going to lose, so I smashed that double, and that got me in position. But I needed to hit one more bet, Steve, and I didn't hit it.
And you know, it's funny you say that you just needed one more, and that, you know, that conversation we had first with Chuck Grubbs on Monday a week ago. We had a wonderful visit with Chuck, who won the whole thing, and
yep.
Nick Tamara was with us on Friday, as he always is, and Nick went through his day, his 2 days, and the as we've been telling everybody, Paul Matisse too was with us on Thursday. The records of the bets is fascinating because it should give everybody who plays, and particularly plays on these kinds of days, it should give them a real pause to realize that even the best players in the industry and the most serious players, they are only hitting maybe two of these 14 races. And you know, then fold in the rest of the undercards that people had the opportunity to bet, and some did leverage those spots. But it the reality is, you really only needed to hit two or maybe three races and hit them right, and that's the same as all of us.
Yeah, that was interesting. I had the best 2 days I've ever had picking. I had 8 of the 14 winners on top of the paper, which doesn't happen very often. That's a hard way to go, including the Todd 4-1 and the 2-year-old Turf Sprint and Jay Walker was 5-1 and a bunch of the logical favorites too, which most everybody had. But yeah, it just came down to you're trying to leverage your best opinions and trying to gauge, you know, where the contest is going to go, which is one of the hardest things because you're betting in the blind because you don't really know what everybody else is doing until after they've done it. And it's just a fascinating exercise, and I've played in a bunch of contests. I like this one the best because it's a real money contest, and I'm not a big fan of the $2 contest. They're great for people that are good at them. I'm not. I had a number of goals in the game years ago. I needed to hit the Derby Superfecta, which I did hit. I needed to cover a Triple Crown. Now I've had two. And I really need to win this contest, Steve. I have some friends who support me, and I want to say this. I had a great friend of mine who we played contests together for years and years. I met him in the Bowie Library in the 70s, researching how to construct fire speed figures right off of Andy's first book, Picking Winners, before I ever met Andy. His name is Ray Tannehill. He was a great, great player, and unfortunately, he passed away 3 years ago, so now I'm in these contests trying to figure it out all by myself. I would love to have had him to talk to you on Friday and Saturday. He might have steered me in a different direction.
You mentioned the figures, and of course, you're part of the Buyer Associates team, and I want to get in some overall Breeders' Cup conversation. You know, we talked to John Service, and we very well could have been talking to Jason as well, and Jason had two horses, particularly of his contingent, run really well. I mean, Uncle Benny, if they run that race 100 times, he wins 48 of them.
He was links the best in that race. He just whatever could go wrong did go wrong. He ran great.
Well, and how much better could World of Trouble have run? And
oh my lord, couldn't have run any. Could, as it turned out,
no.
He ran what would have been the fastest fire figure in history on grass and got beat.
And you know, Andy was with us last Monday, Dick, and Andy mm-hmm. explained the number. And it, yep. Jerry Brown, we were discussing with Paul Matisse on Thursday, the release. We were waiting for Jerry to release the Thoroughgraph numbers, and they came out on Friday. And it's always interesting, you know, to see how Jerry looks at the races.
Sure.
Andy doesn't care, but but a lot of
them. I know Jerry. Yeah, Jerry's got a great opinion. I'd look at what he does. Sure.
Well, the interesting thing, and Jerry completely agrees about the soft turf, and Andy made the suggestion last Monday because people, people are scoffing at how well World of Trouble and Stormy mm-hmm. Liberal ran, and sure. Andy made the point, and Andy Serling has made this point, that we don't get enough soft turf experience to know which horses may be waiting for soft turf and just absolutely relish it. And this is really the example. Plus, you get two horses extending each other, and there's your result, and there's your 119 fig.
Yeah, when you get a race with a gigantic margin back to third, which is what we had there, that's often the tip-off that you're going to get a huge number. And as I know Andy explained to you and then explained to me for the story I wrote for DRF, the other horses who finished back in the back of the pack, given how much they were beaten by, they all ran a race that you would suggest that they could run, a number that they could run. That's why you kind of knew that it was a off-the-charts crazy number. The number we actually had the more difficulty with was the turf. We have a 114 for Enable. It could be higher. It's definitely not lower, but it was just a difficult thing because you're dealing with a mile and a half. And, again, the soft turf, and that's kind of where Magical came from. It was my second horse in there, just had an affinity for these soft turf courses. That's why, Stephen, you know, you were down there, and we were out there, with you that one Wednesday morning just watching the clockers, and information is so key at Breeders' Cup week, and then understanding what to do with it, understanding what's good info, what's bad info, and then trying to put that together with the figures and the trips and everything else that you come up with, and then you got to make some decisions.
I think people have been accepting of the big figs on the grass. The number, the two numbers that we had a terrific debate on. If you haven't had a chance to hear Paul Matisse, Dick, it might be worth pulling it up on the archive because. Okay. It does feel like Monomoy Girls' effort and Accelerates. If anything, those figs feel like they could be higher.
Well, I would say this about Accelerate's fig. We actually projected that up slightly off of what it should have been if we went off all the races throughout the day. Now, again, a mile and a quarter is not a distance we see a lot, even at Churchill Downs. They run the Derby, obviously, there. But it's not the easiest distance to come up with a number. It did seem a little strange that it was that low, but if you go again, I didn't think it was a very good race as I watched it visually. They weren't finishing particularly fast. They were over 27 seconds. I don't think Accelerate was back to his best form. He won just because he's a really, really good horse. I can certainly defend 105. And the Monomoy Girl, I had no issue with what Andy did there. I thought it was fine. I know she's run some numbers faster, higher than what she got on Breeders' Cup Day, but I thought they were both fine. I thought the day fell in pretty uniformly. I don't think it was that difficult a day. But look, Paul's got a great opinion too, and I know he's done figures for years and years. And if he said something, I'm certainly going to listen, and I will go back and check that archive out because he's obviously a guy who everybody respects.
You've got another 4 weeks plus, 6 weeks to the end of the year, and I'm taking surveys. We've been asking everybody that has a vote and some that haven't. Your thoughts about where this Horse of the Year discussion is going to shake out and how you view it?
Yeah, I'm still thinking. We've never had anything like this, and I'm going to have to try to get my own personal bias out of this because, as I think you know, I got justified 40-1 in February, so I'm obviously a justified fan. And what he did is unprecedented in the history of the sport. I mean, we all know that, to go from first race to Triple Crown in 111, 112 days, depending on how you count it. That is a feat that I suspect will never be matched. But then you say, well, wait a second. As it turned out, the three-year-old group wasn't very good. We thought it was going to be a lot better than it actually turned out. But he was just a magnificent horse. And I'm pretty well convinced, if he had been able to keep running, he was going to win all the races. But that's just, I could say that, but he didn't get a chance to do it. And Accelerate had an awesome year. That's a Horse of the Year season, what he did. Sweeping the SoCal, three big stakes races, great ones, and then winning the biggest race we have for horses of all ages, and beating an all-star field, which I think the final total was the 14 had earned $42 million. And grade ones around the world. So that was a star-studded field. So fortunately, I don't have to vote yet, and I'm not sure, but I am giving it some serious thought. And when I left Belmont Park in June, I said, well, this race is over. Well, it turned out it wasn't.
Oh, and as I recall, you mentioned the 40-1, and I think we had this, I think we did have a discussion because you were locked on to him early, and you were convinced that he was something unusual ahead of the curve.
I thought the first race he ran was the best debut I've ever seen by any horse I've ever watched. It was just a freak show. Now, I wasn't there for Ruffian, and I didn't see some of the great horses, obviously, in the past. But that was a freak show. The only one I would compare it to in modern times would be Curlin. And remember, he started about the same time that Justify did. I remember calling Mark Reed is a buddy of mine. That day, and Mark was buying horses for a lot of pretty wealthy clients at the moment. I said, Mark, I don't know what this horse is going to cost, but he's big time. And he called me the next day and says, yeah, they're starting at $2 million or whatever the number was for Curlin. But that's the only basis for comparison I could have. And you could just physically, he was so imposing. And you could tell he wasn't necessarily a sprinter. And that first race was just like, oh, my Lord. And he was in triple digits. That doesn't happen. And any other trainer other than Bob, you'd have probably said, all right, well, they'll just go slow with him. But that's not what Bob does. Bob is looking to win the big races, and he won them all.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating scenario to see where this goes. And you know, you mentioned Mark Reed. I saw Mark at Saratoga this summer, and one of the people I latched on to as a horseman way back with Mr. Nickerson. And Mark's had more bad luck in his life than any one person deserves.
No question. Well, yeah, he certainly has. Mark is a great friend. I've known him for years and years. Greatest racetrack storyteller of all time. If you're ever around Mark and you have an hour, just sit down and just say, start telling me stories. And I do think, I know you know this, Steve, his brother Butch has the best 2-year-old down here at Park since Marty Jones. You'll see him up in New York in the Rems and Maximus Mischief. I was actually out at the track this morning at 9 before we were taping our TV show to watch him work. 5/8 and 59.03 on that track, which has been exceedingly slow all year. And it was just, he cut the corner like, it was like he was almost hitting the rail. He was that smooth coming around the turn. So he'll run in the Rems, and then against a very good race, especially if Code of Honor comes back. And then he'll head for Florida and Gulfstream. And it's Chuck Zackney and Glenn Bennett. Chuck, of course, owned the Fleet Alex, and also is part owner of J-Walk. Chuck's dream is to be involved on the first Friday in May and the first Friday, Saturday in May in 2018.
Well, is Chuck going to be there, or is he going to be in Ireland?
Yeah, that was bizarre because he went over, as you know, for the Eagles game at Wembley against Jacksonville, and then stayed, never knowing J-Walk was going to be in the Breeders' Cup. But he got off the plane at 2:30 in Czech fashion, stopped at the Oaks Turf Club to replenish his account, get a racing form. He told me how much he bet, but I was sworn to secrecy. It wasn't 50 cents or a dollar. And of course, he watched the race at his own by himself, where he wins by 5.5. And let's just say the purse was good, and so was the bet.
Well, Chuck is a lot of fun, and looking forward, and I was going to tie that together. I mean, the fact that Butchie Reed is going forward with Maximus Mischief, and at the same time that John is going to circle forward with J-Walk down in Florida, and she's basically going to take the Catherine Sophia path. So
yep.
Parallel tracks, male and female.
Yeah, no question. And is there anybody better on earth than John Service when he takes a live horse to Churchill Downs? It's unreal.
He's got a pretty solid run going, and he also did he tell you that story that he told us the other day about an Irishman or an Englishman that struck up a conversation with him?
I was standing right with him.
Oh, there you go. Okay, I didn't.
Yeah, it was on the back stretch. Tell me what he related, and I'll try to remember.
Well, just that, you know, that the guy said, "Oh, is this your first time at Churchill? Would this be the first time you start a horse at Churchill Downs?" No, I've been here before. Oh, really?
Yeah, I think he might have been a writer. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, something.
He just kind of came up to us. I guess it was Wednesday morning at the barn after training. And yeah, we were just chuckling. I kept quiet. I just let John do the talking, but it was very fun. Yeah, he's been here before. And he'll probably be back again. And when he comes in from Parks, beware. My man, he does not just come to come. He comes with a horse.
No, Dick, this was wonderful, and I greatly appreciate the homage to Bob Levy and everything else. And I've already gotten a big reaction on Twitter. People love hearing you back on the show. I don't know why I don't call you more often. I'm embarrassed on that front.
No need to be embarrassed, Steve. You got a lot of great guests. Johnny D. I mean, you got Johnny D as a regular. Does it get any better than Johnny D?
Johnny D is an entity unto himself.
He's one of the all time great racetrack characters and one of my favorite guys. So come on.
Exactly. Dick Girardi, everybody, and you read him. Even though I thought you retired, by the way, but yet you're still
fake retire. It's the ultimate fake retirement. Everybody says, "How's retirement?" I go, "Ask me when it actually happens." Yeah, I'm actually heading up after this. I got a Penn State basketball game I'm doing tonight on the radio. So I just was taping our TV show this morning. Just wrote a couple of stories on Bob Levy. Yeah, I'm not full time at the paper anymore, but I'm in action. And yeah, I don't know anything about this retirement thing. It's a total fraud.
Exactly. I had Steve Crist on Friday. Technically, he's retired, but he's betting. He's nosing around. Buyer supposedly stopped writing, and we miss both Steve and Andy's writing. But they're, when you're in this business, you're in this game.
You can't.
Yeah, exactly.
We're in it.
Exactly right. I love it, Dick Girardi. Thanks so much.
You got it. Thanks, Steve.
How great. Extended visit with Dick Girardi. We got a bunch of topics in. We got most everything he could possibly. I probably could have thrown a few more things at him. An absolute Rolodex of Philadelphia, and not just Philadelphia, but Eastern Pennsylvania. I missed one opportunity. I could have slipped in the Raiders Colgate trip into Lehigh on Saturday, and they did give up a touchdown. Unfortunately, I'm mortified. The first time since September 1st that Colgate gave up a touchdown. Yeah, 29 quarters without giving up a score, but Lehigh did get in the end zone. 48-6. The Colgate the Maroon are steamrolling right now. They are going to play. They got a non-conference thing before the playoffs. They're playing Army on Saturday. What is it? Munchie Stadium? Moochie? Muncie Stadium? Something like that. And I haven't been there in forever. We used to go play them semi regularly, and that's a beautiful. This is not November 17th is not the right date for us to have to go down to play Army. You want to go there September, October, when you're going to get a nice fall day. Not that we've had a decent weekend back-to-back 2 days all fall. Just been terrible. I mean, just ridiculous how lousy this fall has been weather-wise. I mean, and killing us on the racetrack. Speaking of which, I guess we'll stay here. We only got a couple of minutes. And tomorrow I've got a ton of Todd Pletcher late in the show tomorrow. We still have to catch up with Jeremy Plonk, so we'll probably do Jeremy. We've got John White tomorrow. I want to get Jack Sisterson in here. Jack with that stake win last week in New York, and his first stake win as a trainer, and a couple of other stakes from the races off the turf in New York on Saturday, exalting. No surprise, of course, for Kieran once it came off the turf, exulting an easy winner with Rajiv. And back to his roots, wins the Atlantic Beach. This is the two-year-old, also Matt Gatsis, this one with Terra Nova. But back to his roots, came off the turf and gets a nice win in the Atlantic. And then yesterday, the Stewart Manor, congratulations to our friend Paul Pompa and Paul's Homebred. And this is interesting. He kept the filly. He's Mary's Follies, who has been a very important broodmare for Paul. And he kept this one by Animal Kingdom. And so this is a very valuable stake win. Chad trains this one and is out of is by an Animal Kingdom out of the More Than Ready mare. And Mary's Follies, and I'm gonna she had the one baby, was it last year or 2 years ago? She's, you know, Night Prowler, but she had the American Pharaoh yearling that fetched a lot of money. And is also the one of Mrs. Weber's, of the one she had a baby that also was expensive. Anyway, she's been a very productive broodmare, and Pompa keeping this one. And you also had Highway Star. How about Highway Star running for what, the third time in 3 weeks? Right? Yeah, Highway Star, who supposedly wasn't going to run in the Breeders' Cup, but then did. That was after the Iroquois win. Let's see. Iroquois was October 20th, then came back 2 weeks in the Filly and Mare Sprint, and then came back yesterday to win the Stallion Stakes, the New York Stallion Series Stake. I think that was the Staten Island. Yesterday, and she won easy. I mean, she outclassed that field a little bit, but still, you know, you still got to go get it done. So I think she's headed. I think she's headed to the breeding shed for the Bromans, if I'm not mistaken. We also got all of the Gulfstream stuff to talk about, which included those juvenile races. And Paco Lopez gets his first Breeders' Cup win. Did Paco, of course, on Roy H. How about, what, he five stake wins, I think, Saturday? At the racetrack formerly known as Calder. So we'll go through those. Todd Pletcher won a pair, too, so we'll touch on those with Todd. Todd's won a bunch the last couple of weeks. The Pletcher team has come alive. I have to go over the rest of the Laurel stuff, too. The Commonwealth, we got to get a hold of Steve Asmussen and talk about Hot Springs, etc., etc. I want to thank Dick Girardi. That was really fun. Johnny D., Mark Cassie, and George Weaver. That was our show. Gus looked at Del Mar today. We got the Del Mar stuff to do, too, the three little stakes. So we'll get all that done tomorrow. And we still have more Breeders' Cup house cleaning. Gus looked at the late action at Del Mar, late pick four. So I'll put that up on the website. Have a terrific day. Remember all the servicemen who get to bear the title veteran. Talk to you in the morning. If you missed anything, replay tomorrow and SneakPick.com.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.